But I just took a leap of faith and I got picked up by a random black man in a random van, started snapping pictures of him in the license plates and was like, oh, well, listen, if I disappear, like, this is who you need to look for.
You have a risky life.
I have lived a very risky life, yes.
Where do we start? You want to start with your childhood?
Sure.
Tell me about that. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Texas, all over Texas. Being a gypsy, we kind of move around a lot.
A literal gypsy or?
Yeah, like my dad was a biker. My mom reads tarot cards for a living, does palm readings. The whole, you know, sleight of the hands, you know, hustle.
Anybody pay taxes in the family?
No, never. No, okay. Never. I think I was the very first person to actually get an education and buy a house. I'm the very first homeowner in my family. But I grew up in a commune, basically. There was never more than 5-6 families living in one location. My dad was a biker. My mom was a gypsy. And I have two older siblings.
A biker with one of the known clubs?
Yes, Hells Angels.
Yeah, I've heard of him.
Yeah, he was a general in the Hells Angels. He used to handle my mom's uncle's lightweight. You know what I mean? Like, that's how they met. And he just kind of, he was dating my aunt, my mom's cousin, and she was a stripper. And then my mom stole him away from her. And then they ended up having me. My dad was a black sheep of a suburban family that turned biker.
You couldn't write this story any better. how would you describe your childhood in general?
Chaos. Just pretty much chaos. It was, my dad got sick at a really young age. My mom was trying to take care of the family, take care of all the kids. She had all five of her brother's kids. And then she had three kids of her own. So there was eight of us total in like a 2-bedroom house. My dad was a real bad drunk. So he was great for the kids, like fun, happy. But whenever adults started coming into the mix, that hitman came out at him real hard. Him and my mom used to fight with shovels in the backyard. Like I remember the cops having to escort her in the house one time because he went through the house and busted every light bulb in the house and was waiting for him and her and my sister with a butcher knife in the corner. Like, but he got really sick. And so at a very young age, I had to learn how to separate pills and cook my own food and make sure that I got up for school. And so I didn't really have much of a childhood.
When you use that term hitman to describe your dad, you meant that
literally? Yes.
And what do you know about your dad's?
He was the person that you called when you needed something handled. He was 6'4", 235 pounds, a solid biker, no remorse. Like I said, no remorse in his soul. He was a fun guy, though, like as far as a kid and to be his relative, like he was amazing. But to get on the wrong side of him was very dangerous.
How do you treat you?
Me?
Yeah.
I was his world. Like I was his everything. He had two other kids besides me. Three, actually. I didn't find out to one until I was like 18. She just messaged me on MySpace out of the blue and was like, hey, your dad is my dad. What? But I was the only one of his kids he got to see. So he just kind of engulfed himself in me. And he hated my sister, my mom's daughter. Like they would fight and bicker. And literally, like I've had to come in between him, like beating her in the face. And he'd be like, okay, let's go watch cartoons. You know, and I was like, okay. You know, it was just a normal Tuesday afternoon.
What kind of teenager were you?
I got emancipated at 13. Because of the lifestyle that I grew up in, it wasn't abnormal for young girls to date older men. And I ended up getting in this really bad relationship. I was 14 and he was 22. He was a real big drug dealer, you know, hustler. I didn't see it at that time as I was being raped, you know, and molested and stuff like that because this was a grown man with a child. because it was normal. In the gypsy community, it's normal to be gifted to another adult. My mom couldn't handle me, so she emancipated me after my dad died. And she got with this other man. He didn't want kids. So I was just – had to do my own thing at that point. So I met this guy, and we got a place. And he used to he used to beat me a lot. Like, if it wasn't for my friend Ashley, which I named my daughter, my oldest daughter, after, because this girl saved my life so many times. Like, he would be like, listen, she's had enough. Beat me unconscious, you know, spray me down with water hose in 20-degree weather, sending me into, you know, shock because I have asthma. I got locked in closets. I got duct taped to beds. I was very naive, I guess, but tough. I survived it. He used to trade me to his drug dealer, and his drug dealer would keep me for weeks and weeks and weeks at a time until he paid him his money. And I just had to do whatever I had to do to survive. You know, like, it wasn't something that was easy to accept about myself. You know, but when you're a poor girl from a Texas community and you don't have any family, really, and the family that you do have are all brainwashed into believing that, you know, it's okay to do these things, like it's okay for your child to date a full-grown man, it's okay to be drug dealers, it's okay to be this, you really don't have a safe community to lean on. So I was in that from the time I was 13 till I was 18. And then he died in a car wreck with my two best friends, and I was free. I got free. I didn't go back to the community. I ended up having a one-night stand with this little skateboarder dude and got pregnant. And when I found out I was having a girl, I left the community indefinitely. Like, definitely. Like, there was no going back. I didn't want the same things to happen to my daughter that happened to me. You know, and I was like, I'm going to change my life. Like, I'm free. I don't have to be shot up in my sleep anymore. I don't have to be – I overdosed the first time at 15 years old. You know, I can't count the times that I've been sexually assaulted or been traded like cattle. I actually got branded by one of my owners. I just got the tattoo covered up a couple months ago, which was exciting.
Branded in what way?
Well, he would tattoo all the girls that he owned.
He owned?
Yeah, that was his property. And I was one of those girls. So it was a heart with vines on my chest. And every time that I got, like, every time that I did something I wasn't supposed to do, or every time that I went against the grain, he would add to my tattoo and beat me. I told everybody that it was just this weird guy, you know, that gave me a tattoo. But the truth is, I just never wanted to accept the fact that that's what I was going through at 16, 17 years old.
When you say he owned you, what did that mean?
That meant I wore what he told me to wear. I went with who he told me to go with. I did what he told me to do.
So you're having sex with other guys?
Oh, yeah. 100%. Like, I wasn't a choice. It was, if you were told to do that, either that or you get your teeth knocked out. I've had my jaw broke twice. I've had my ribs broke. I've been stabbed. And I just I've always had too headstrong. I've always been too headstrong. Like, even though I was in these predicaments, I would get in trouble because I would buck the system. You know, I was like, I don't want to do this, or I don't want to go there. Well, it's not your choice. You know, especially when you're a young girl and you're around all these people that are in their late 20s, early 30s, early 40s, you know, and they're perfectly content with beating and raping a 12, 13, 14-year-old girl. You know, so that's just – there's no line that they won't cross. If you don't want your life taken, then you do what the fuck you're told. You know what I mean? Like – but I'm not having to, it was really rough. It was really hard. If it wouldn't have been for a couple of my friends in high school, I probably wouldn't have made it out. And I stayed using drugs until I found out I was pregnant with my daughter. And then I turned my whole life around. I stopped using. I went and got 3 college degrees. I bought my first house. I started working as a substitute teacher, and just kind of tried to put all my past behind me. And then about 5 years ago, my oldest daughter, the one that I left my community for, she came out talking. Let me backtrack a little bit. When I found out I was pregnant with my daughter, I met my husband. My husband has DID disorder. And I've had to fight with him a lot, trying to keep him from killing himself, trying to keep him from, you know, tearing everything around him, me getting called really bad names. Like, being in toxicity is something that I'm just accustomed to. So, like, we've been together 13 years. We're still together to this day. And we were both pretty active. He was really active in his drug addiction and alcoholism, and he tried to kill himself. He, you know, like, we got into a fight. He headbutted me, blacked both my eyes. And I couldn't leave him. Like, he has a disorder that doesn't really, he blacks out and doesn't have conscious recollection of things that he does. And so I've always tried to save him from himself. And then 5 years ago, I found out that my daughter was being molested by my stepdad, the guy that kicked me out of my family home because he didn't want children. My daughter came out saying that he had been molesting her from the time that she was 9 until she was 12, and that he was fixing that if she ever said anything, he would kill me and my mom, but that she was getting too old. And so that meant that he was fixing to move on to abusing her little sister. And so to save her little sister, she came out and told everybody what was happening, which drove a big wedge between me and my husband, because he was like, I told you this dude was a pervert. I told you this dude, and you never believed me. Well, you were drunk all the time. How am I supposed to believe you? You're a man. Men have done nothing but torture me my whole life. How am I supposed to believe you? You know? And when the cops went to the house to arrest him, there was an 8-hour cop standoff at my house, and it ended in him shooting himself in the head in the house that me and my children still live in. Brain matter on the walls, blood on the floor, you know, like, it was pretty traumatizing. And then I found out my daughter was hurting herself because of this, and she's been in and out of psychiatric hospitals, and I just couldn't handle it, and I relapsed, and I started using drugs again. And me and my current husband, we were hitting it hard. We were doing meth. We were doing coke. We were taking pills. We were anything I could do just to numb out what was going on, you know. And I've never been open and honest about it, my story, to anybody. My husband doesn't know my story. My mother doesn't know my story. My kids don't know my story, you know, because I've always just put on this face that I believed everybody wanted to see. And suppressed everything else, no matter how much it made me hurt myself, no matter how much drugs it made me use, no matter how many college degrees I got, nothing could make it go away.
Well, this is a nice way to share your story without having to repeat it.
Yes.
100 times.
Yes. I've been asked to speak at meetings. I've never spoke at meetings. I've talked about it in my therapy. Cause when you go from being cattle basically to being a person, it's a major transition that I still struggle with. You know, like, me and my husband, we were split up. I was kidnapped back in October by a guy that I met out here in treatment. And he was very abusive, and he held me hostage for 2 days. And we ended up having to call the police, and I relapsed. But it wasn't like a choice. It was almost like back when I was a teenager again. It was like he was putting it in my face, and I was trying to just numb out what I was going through in the moment. You know, like, he was talking about how he was going to take my body down to Mexico and drove me all the way out to Long Beach. Me being from Texas, I don't know anything around here. You know, like, I don't know where I'm at. I don't know where to go. I don't know, have anybody to call. I don't have, luckily, my mentor, which is he was one of the people that, the first time I'd ever seen Soft White Underbellies was because of Pretty.
Pretty Brendale is a good friend of mine, and he's got a great rehab up in the valley.
Yeah, I actually for my safety, for what happened, Pretty brought me into his detox, and him and Aldo relocated me so that the guy couldn't find me again. And like, I was raped in my car, and I was getting better, but it still wasn't making me feel better. You know what I mean? Like right now I have a really great job. I manage a sober living. First time I'm actually being able to provide a life for my children, you know, like, but I still just feel so damaged. You know, like, I got dressed today and I was walking out of the house and my clients looked at me and they're like, you don't even look like you were ever strung out on drugs. You know, like, they aren't even going to believe you when you walk in there and you tell them that you used to be a prostitute and you used to be this, you used to be that. I was like, well, that's the amazing thing about recovery. You know what I mean? It's not, you don't have to be who you were. You get to be who you want to be. And as much as, and I'm putting the work in, so I'm hoping that the results are going to come out at the end.
Was there something that you had that maybe other addicts don't, that just helped you rebuild your life?
I wouldn't say that I had anything.
Because so many relapse and just can never stop relapsing.
I wouldn't say that I have anything special or anything that nobody else can get. But I would say that I have always been hard-headed, and I refuse to accept circumstances for what they are. I make them what I want them to be. Now, granted, that doesn't always work out in my favor. But it does make it harder to allow yourself to fail, or to see yourself as a failure when you're setting your own guidelines.
How do you feel about being a victim?
I've never seen myself as a victim.
Yeah, see, that I think is a big part of this.
When
you don't see yourself as a victim, then you're going to do things to correct the situation.
I've always seen myself more as a survivor. You know, like, victims, that's a mentality. And I won't allow myself to have the mentality of a victim, because then that gives the people that have hurt me and the people that abuse me and the people that mistreat me the power over me. And even if I'm walking around with cracked ribs and bruised face and a sore ego and 2 days clean, at least I'm walking. At least I'm breathing. At least I'm going in the trajectory that I want to be going. Even if it's just baby steps, even if I'm taking 3 steps forward and 2 steps back, at least I took that 1 step forward. And with getting clean, it's like, a lot of people, I had somebody die in my facility not too long ago. You know, she was a young girl, you know, and it almost sent me to relapse, because I remember being that girl that came in and just wanted to sleep and just wanted everybody to leave me alone, just wanted to be at the program and not work the program. You know, just a safe place to stay where nobody could rape me or sell me or drug me up, lock me in a closet. Like, I still to this day can't go into closets. Like, every house I have, I take my closet door off of the hinges. Like, because I just can't, every time I get close to it, you know, it just sends me into panic attacks. And I'm working with that through therapy, but I'm not giving into drugs. And I've done every drug under the sun, you know, like, there's probably not a drug out there that I haven't done. Peyote. I haven't done peyote.
Okay. Is there any temptation to relapse?
Every day. I'm what they call an emotional user. So which means I can stay clean for years at a time as long as I don't feel the emotion heightened one way or the other, at one end of the spectrum or the other, whether I'm too happy or too sad. Whenever I get into my emotions, I want to get into my addiction. So I try to keep that as checked as possible. But it's just, addiction is in my everyday life and relapse is always possible. But there's also that possibility that I don't ever have to relapse again. I don't ever have to be branded like cattle. I don't ever have to have sex with a person that I didn't choose to. you know, and that's what keeps me going. That's what keeps me clean, is that when I, the more sobriety time I get, the more choices I get that are my choices, not force, not persuasion, not coercion, you know, they're mine, you know, mistakes or good ones, they're mine. So I can't be mad at myself for finally having the freedom to be a person.
And you're raising your daughter in a very, very different way than,
yes,
than
you were. I've got three girls and one boy. My oldest is adopted. She's actually my niece, but I've had her since she was 9. My girls are strong. I've raised my girls. I've got a 15-year-old, and then I got an autistic boy that's 12, and I got a 10-year-old girl. And I've raised my girls strong. Like, they don't take no shit. Like, they don't take, they are compassionate, but they're also very much seeing what I went through, seeing what their dad went through, and they are like, we don't want to party any part of that. You know, we don't want to have anything to do with struggling or being, getting beaten in the face because you've been high, seeing shadow people, like thinking the neighbors are spying on you, you know, like that's what they grew up in, because that's the, I was very active in my addiction for a very long time. And even in my cleanest moments, I could never quit smoking weed because of my sexual trauma. I couldn't sleep. Every time I'd close my eyes, I couldn't go into closets. I couldn't do anything, you know, so I would smoke weed to help with my anxiety because I couldn't get approved for Medicaid. I couldn't get approved to go see a therapist. I couldn't get approved to be on psych meds, you know, and now I'm on like 600 milligrams of lithium and Prozac, and I finally found a combination that's taken that craving that I feel like I need to numb, and that I can face it now and talk about it without it crippling me or making me feel like you're judging me or making me feel like I'm less of a person because of the things that I've gone through. You know, because it doesn't make me any less human, the fact that I was sold like cattle. It doesn't make me any less of a woman, the fact that I was raped. You know, does none of that. None of that makes me less of a person. What makes me less of a person is me not allowing it to conquer my life. And so I've taught my children that shit happens. Life fucking happens, and it'll hit you hard, and it'll hit you raw. And it is sometimes ununderstanding. But you have a family to lean on. You will always have me. You and my daughters don't even know what I've been through in life. Like, when they watch this will be the first time that they've ever heard the fact that I was cattle, or that I was prostituted, or that I, you know, done drugs in their fucking childhood bedrooms. You know, like, I've been doing smoking weed with my mom since I was like 12. Getting weed for her since I was like 14. And God bless my mom, I love her to death. She's a great grandma. She was a horrible mother. Great grandma. You know, she's doing the things that she needs to do now to help with the children that I have. She's the whole reason why I'm out here, being able to be out here and getting treatment.
You're a perfect example of how someone can break the cycle.
Yes. I'm breaking generational curses, and I'm teaching my girls that it doesn't matter where you come from. All that matters is where you're going. And don't let anybody determine who you are but you. You know, like, it's difficult some days to wake up and just get out of bed. But I have to tell myself that I should be proud of myself, ultimately. I shouldn't get depressed. I shouldn't, you know, like today I was having a panic attack thinking about coming out here and like looking at these cameras and telling my story. And I called my husband about it, and he's been clean. He came out here and got clean. He just went back to Texas with our kids. And he was like, you know, Tiffany, you don't have to do this. I was like, you're right. I don't have to do this. I was like, but A, I need the money. I was like, because I'm trying to establish a lifestyle that providing for my children, and I'm trying to work on getting advances. My car needs to be fixed. I was like, there's worse things I've done for it, for money. I was like, so he's like, you know, just don't put yourself out there to where you're going to get hurt. And I was like, but that's the whole point of being exposed, is to allow yourself to be, to for people to go on there and be like, oh, well, I remember her, or, oh, hey, I know that girl, or, hey, fuck that bitch, or, you know, like, there's, like, I've never chose to put myself in a line of judgment. I've always just been placed there. You know, like, when you're with other people that are being traded and everything, you line up, you get picked, you get purely judged about your exterior and what you they believe you have to offer them. And those girls have no choice. Those girls have no voice. They have nobody protecting them. And I want to change that. I want to, with my college degrees and my big old house in Texas, I want to open up a safe haven for people that are trafficked, people that don't have a voice, people that don't even know their kids because they given birth and they had to give them up, you know? I couldn't imagine having a kid with one of my rape, you know, with one of the people that raped me, you know? But there's girls out there that do. And so every time I think, I'm like, fuck, I had it bad. I just think about those girls out there that had it worse. And those guys, there's guys out there that's the same thing that's happening to them, you know, like, and it's, nobody's giving these people a voice. Nobody's, and that's why I decided to come in and like share myself, share my story, share what I've gone through. Because ultimately I can give two shits what anybody's going to say about me. Because I know who I am, and I am an amazing, compassionate, beautiful soul that deserves love and kindness. Wasn't always like that. I done bad things. I've made bad choices, but I'm making a better decision today. And I'm hoping that if anything, one person can look at my story and be like, if she can do it, I can do it. Because I never thought that I would be here. I never thought I'd be sitting somewhere with my nails done and in a nice dress with makeup and my hair done and looking like a human. Like, it's mind-boggling to me. It's like a foreign concept. Like, I might as well be speaking Japanese. Because that's how much I understand it.
Your life made some, you made some major changes.
Yes, I really have. And I have everything to thank to, you know, to Pretty, to Life is Pretty, and to my sponsor, you know, to my mentor, Aldo Fernandez, and to the people that seen me and was like, we need to help her. And whenever I was messing up and putting myself back in those predicaments, they drew me back and was like, listen, we need to sit down and have a talk. Like, you're falling back into old ways because this is where you're comfortable and this is what you think you deserve. But the fact of the matter is this is not where you need to be comfortable. This is not what you deserve. You deserve better. You deserve this. You deserve that. You know, and protected me whenever I did get into a very questionable situation, which shown me that men, because I've always been abused by men, everybody from, you know, the people that I hung out with as kids all the way up to the people that were supposed to protect me as adults, you know, they showed me that people can genuinely care about you and not want anything in return. Not want you, you know, like, the worst comment that people can say is, you know, like, you're worth nothing unless you're on your back. That was like something I got told a lot, you know, like, and they made me feel like I was something standing on my feet. And that is a feeling that I can never replace.
Tiffany, let me ask you one last question. What would you say is the most important lesson you've learned in all of this?
The most important lesson for me would be to never give up. That even when the cards are stacked against you and you feel like everything has gone wrong, just holding on to my faith in my God and knowing that I'm going to wake up tomorrow and things could change for me. That's what keeps me going. That's what keeps my drive, even on the bad days. Because it's just incomprehensible to think that you're not going to have bad days. Like, no. But what matters is how you handle those bad days.
All right. Tiffany, thank you so much for sharing your story. And I wish you
Thank you for having me.
I wish you all the luck in the world from here on out.
Thank you.
Thank you.